said the Trump administration failed to file notice and public comment requirements before removing that part of the Affordable Care Act. California sued in October, saying that the change could result in millions of women losing free birth control, leading to unintended pregnancies that could drain the state social services program. A government lawyer says there's no evidence that would happen. I'm Jackie Quinn.
More on these stories can be found at townhall.com. From Washington, I'm Bob Agnew.
The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
You know, the day destroys the night. Night divides the day.
Good morning, and welcome to the Being Found Show, the guide to being found by more buying customers. If your company isn't being found, who is? We're going to talk to you about how to be found by more buying customers. It's straight talk about the internet and about your business. It is also the best hour on the radio for business. You never agree with me on that, Chauncey. I swear to God, this is the best hour.
Yeah, it's the best hour on radio ever.
Ever. That's right. That's right. Ever. Okay, so you can check us out at beingfound.com. We actually break up the shows and have all the audio there. We have transcripts of the shows. And, again, we're coming to you on video. So you could see Chauncey and I's great-looking face because we're going to tackle video again.
And people can revel in the fact that tomorrow is my birthday, yet I look older than you. And I'm younger.
That's right. You are significantly younger. You are way younger. You're like 4 or 5 months younger than me.
Really? Is that it?
Yeah, that's it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. by the way, I'm Cloudwise Joe, the younger, good-looking one. And the grouchy, Christmas caroling, Santa Claus-looking Chauncey, happy birthday boy, is here with us. He's my co-host.
Thank you.
Your co-host.
Flattering introduction.
That's right. You are one good-looking dude. You make me want a beard.
Yeah. I'm an aging hipster, you know.
Yeah, that's right. You actually, I've known you for a while. You might be a hipster before there were hipsters.
I've been a hipster for a long time.
Yeah, yeah, the hipster lumberjack-looking thing, you had that going for a long time.
Yeah, ever since I've been married, and I'm working on my 14th year here, so I've had a beard for 14 years, so... If I were to shave this beard off, I'd probably have a serious tan line.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. I don't even know what you'd look like. Well, in case everybody's wondering, now you can check us out. I don't know why you'd want to watch us. but if you go to beingfound.com, this episode and hopefully the next episodes there'll be video there. But I think it's been said before, Chauncey, you look like Al. From was it Al Borland?
Richard Karn. Yeah.
Yeah, Richard Karn. You're better.
I stopped wearing my red flannel shirt just so I didn't have to hear it anymore.
Yeah. All right.
No, thanks. Thanks for that.
This is going to be a pretty good show. I think they're all good shows. There's a lot going on, and we're going to try to catch up on that. There's a ton of new news going on with Google. We're going to try to get to some of that. I got to tell you, I've been in this business for a long time. But over the last year or so that I've been doing this radio show, and now I got to really pay attention weekly what's going on with search and Google and all that kind of stuff. It honest to God, changes daily or every week. And Google, I bring Google up a lot. There's a lot to being found, but we bring Google up a lot because, frankly, everybody Googles before they buy something, so it's important to talk about them. But they are adding new features and trying new things all the time.
People are Googling and they don't know it. Like if you ask Alexa what you're looking for, you're Googling. You know, if you're using other websites, other search platforms, a lot of the time you're using Google.
That's right. Okay, that reminds me. I actually don't have this in my news to cover today, so I'm going to cover it in this segment real quick. I believe that Twitter is now opening its API so that you can get every single tweet that's ever been tweeted on Twitter, try to say that 5 times fast, since 2006 when it was launched. And they what they've had up until this, an API, that's basically a door that allows programmers to access technology or connect with another piece of technology. And so it used to be that if you're an enterprise client of Twitter or enterprise developer, you could access tweets for the last 30 days. Well, now everybody apparently can access Twitter's history, every tweet ever done from not just you, the whole history. You can access it. Imagine what developers are going to start coming out with. You know, I mean, that's almost a history of the world over since 2006.
It also creates some interesting search content ideas, because for a while there, Google was indexing Twitter and serving up Twitter as results, and then they decided that the results were too short, and so they stopped doing it. But now you could use the API and actually create pages that cover topics and pull in all those tweets into your topic as being a part of your topic, and then be indexed and actually create relevant content with limited effort.
Yeah, limited effort. Yeah, I do remember that when they were indexing it. They indexed Facebook. Well, and if I remember correctly, Google basically does look at every single piece of content as its own page. So even a single tweet is actually a full page of content.
Yeah.
Even though we're seeing it in a tweet stream, it's actually a full page of content. So that's really interesting, because you could have summaries and content. Imagine just my limited imagination. You know, you might do a history of how news has been handled, and you might just take decades and say, here's how it was handled in this, or I mean, you might take a year and say, this is how it was handled in this year, this is how it was handled in this year, and that's a whole page. And like you said, you've written little content, however, you've configured a bunch of relevant, interesting, shareable content.
Yeah, it's like automated crowdsourcing via hashtag.
Yeah. So that's really interesting what's going on there. And so I wasn't going to cover that, but you reminded me of it. Chauncey, we're going to also get into a tip of the day. One of the things I want to do more and more is take what you and I deal with each week and bring it into the show, so people can learn from, you know, what we see, what we're learning from, mistakes made by clients, mistakes made by us. And when I was thinking about this tip of the day that I want to go into in the next segment, it reminded me how you, even when you know it all, or think you know it all, or figure you've learned as much as you can learn, even the basics sometimes are not something you remember to do all the time. Or you, what may have worked yesterday, I hate to say it, it may not have as much impact tomorrow, because just things are changing so much.
And it's hard to switch gears. You know, you switch gears from being a problem solver and a forward thinker to switch back to being a checklist jockey. You know, and it's hard to switch those gears, yet both are very necessary.
Yeah, it's funny you say that. I had that very experience the last probably 2 weeks in really grueling, strategic thinking, exhausting, lots of different people and large budgets concerned, and, you know, one error in strategical thinking, and who knows what's going to happen. And we got to figure out what people are going to do once we roll out the tactics to the strategical thinking, right? And this is all going on. It's been weeks and weeks of this. And I get a text from one of my clients and ask if I can jump on with him and his attorney, because they're creating documentation. And so I jump on, and they tell me that the meeting is about terms of use and contracts for web users who are going to access their products and things like that. And they kind of rattle off some things they wanted, and they asked what I would add to it. I'm like, I don't know. People want to return stuff. I literally cannot shift gears from being at 30,000 feet to what should go on to a terms and agreement documentation, you know. But that's what we have to do, and I think everybody's got to do it now, don't you?
Absolutely, and I tend to organize my tasks in a way where whichever mindset I'm in, I can hop onto that list.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I can kind of, if I'm in a mindless state, you know, I can just start checking checklists and verifying things. And if I'm in a creative zone, I know to move on to the next creative topic, you know.
Oh, yeah, interesting. So you put them in buckets so you can tackle them instead of forcing yourself to tackle them when you're just not there for it.
Yeah,
I'm the force. I force myself.
Inevitably, you have to force yourself sometimes.
Yeah.
But, you know, given the option, I work off of how I'm feeling.
Huh, interesting. Okay, so we are coming to the end of the first segment. It's going to be a really good show. Don't go anywhere. You can check us out at beingfound.com. This is the Being Found Show. I'm your host, Cloudwise Joe, my very good-looking host, Chauncey Hallworth, and we'll be right back.
The average adult is issued 32 troopers that, with proper care and just a little discipline, should serve you well during your entire tour of duty on this planet. They're called your teeth. But when your platoon gets out of line, holes in the formation, or other problems, you need to call in an expert, like General, Dr. William Farrell, with decades of experience keeping those troops in line and executing their assigned duties properly and dependably. If you'd rather not be there while he reestablishes order amongst the troops, Dr. Farrell offers sedation dentistry. He and his highly trained staff will whip your troops into shape without any discomfort. And having served himself in both the Navy and the Marine Corps, Dr. Farrell offers special consideration to veterans. Let him take the best care of your platoon of teeth, and they will serve you always. Call 547-5757 or visit palosidrodentistry.com. At ease.
And for a limited time, Dr. Farrell is offering x-ray, exam, and cleaning for just $175. Call 547-5757 to schedule your visit.
Hi, I'm Dr. Kara Tennant with CARE Animal Hospital, and I'm inviting you to join me on the Carl and Linda Morning Show. We will be discussing all of Reading's local pet needs and how to keep your pet happy, healthy, and safe. CARE Animal Hospital is a local veterinary clinic located on the corner of Hilltop Drive and Lake Boulevard. Make sure your best friend has the best possible care today.
Join Dr. Kara Tennant on Friday morning, March 16th from 8 a.m. to 9 a.m. on Free Fire Radio here on 1460 AM KCNR.
On Friday, March 9th at the new Sheridan Reading Hotel at the Sundial Bridge, the Trade School is hosting the Electrician's Ball 2018, an elegant evening of dining along with the Craftsman's Art Auction. This fundraiser supports scholarships and technology upgrades. Please help us create rewarding career opportunities in the skilled trades. Millions of jobs are waiting. Our young people deserve a prosperous future. Visit ShastaBE.com/events and register or call 221-5556. All are welcome.
The Trade School, the Shasta Builders Exchange. Train, build, succeed.
I'm here with Mike of Estate Granite and Things. Hey, Mike, so I gotta ask, what's with the and things?
And things is anything that we can make with granite and metal.
So you're saying it's gonna last?
It's forever furniture.
Wow, did you come up with that one?
Absolutely. The and things are dining room tables, wine bistros, fire pit patio tables, and our ever-popular granite-lined roasters. Really, anything you can imagine inside or out.
You know, that store-bought stuff has to be replaced every few years. You know, it gets hot up here.
That's why we call it Forever Furniture. You can will it to your children.
Mike, with Estate Granite and Things, our builder of choice, thinking completely out of the box.
The first time I walked into my new kitchen, I was amazed. But after, I started to notice all the little things that make my kitchen unique. From the tile backsplash to the seams in the granite, everything was truly a work of art.
Hi, this is Mike from Estate Granite and Things. I know how important quality to a homeowner is, so give me a call at 241-STONE or come by our showroom at 4900 Mountain Lakes Boulevard. Estate Granite and Things, completely out of the box. Or visit us at estategranite.com.
All right, welcome back to the Being Found Show, where this show is going to give straight talk about the Internet, your business, and what you can do about it. If you're not being found, who is? You really need to be found. Your customers are looking for you online. They're looking for products. They're looking for services. And frankly, they expect to find you there. So we want you to be found by more buying customers. Okay, Chauncey, I got a tip. I got a tip of the day. I got a tip of the day.
No prep for this. You're going to throw it out there, and we're going to see what I know, right?
That is right, because I love doing that. I think I come up with these just to make you squirm, which you never do. It's always embarrassing because you always have it figured out. I'm calling it my two-minute tip, and I was thinking I'm terrible at naming things, and I fully expect this to take 5 to 10 minutes, but it's my show, and if I want to call it the two-minute tip, I decided I'm allowed to. Right?
No, right?
Don't you think?
Yes.
Absolutely. I mean, if it's on the Internet, it's real, and when this is on Being Found, it's going to be the five-minute, two-minute tip.
As long as the first tip is don't believe everything anybody tells you, like this tip is only going to be 2 minutes.
Well, right, right. Yeah, and I'm a French model.
Right.
Okay, well, and the idea here is I see things happening during the week, and it always seems like there's like one thing that happens during the week that really is, wow, why isn't everybody doing that? Or, gosh, why am I just now getting around to making sure that's being done everywhere? You know, it's just one of those duh moments or whatever. And so don't laugh at me when I say this, but the two-minute tip is to make your titles of your products or your web pages or your blog posts descriptive. Don't make me guess. Okay, so let me give an example first, Chauncey, and then let's talk about why this matters. So I think we've all been to a website and we've seen the description of a product. It might say this, camper shell, as opposed to Lear white camper shell for a Dodge long bed 2006 truck, right? So one, I don't even know if I should keep reading or click through or care what that is. The other, I'm thinking, gosh, that's what I'm looking for. Thanks, I can dig in. So descriptive titles matter, Chauncey?
Oh, absolutely, and for a couple of reasons. You know, the first thing that popped in my head was that there's probably an equation here. So when somebody comes to your website, there's like, what, 8 seconds of load time before you lose 80% of the people who
right.
are coming. Or I don't have that number exactly right, but I can tell you that if I'm clicking a vague title, that amount of time has just been cut to a third because I already know that I'm going to have to spend extra time when I get there to figure out if that's what I'm even after. So I think there's some sort of equation here that if your title is too vague, you have even less amount of time to make an impression when they get there. And part of the reason why that's a problem is, you know, in aggregation, even on your own site, aggregating your product through your site. So somebody types in, you know, car accessories into your website and camper shell comes up. Or somebody else is aggregating your products out to Google products and camper shell comes up. You know, you might think you have all this great, like, oh, what about my subtitle and stuff like that? Well, subtitle is not normally coming up in your search results, in your aggregate results. You're just getting camper shell. And I right. think a lot of the time people do that because it's easier for them. You know, it's easier for them to look at their own products and look at their own inventory and understand what that is, but they're not really looking at it in a proactive sense because it's not supposed to be easy for you. It's supposed to be easy for your visitor.
Yeah, well, and that gets back to rules. There's three rules when it comes to following being found guidelines and being found by more customers, and that first rule is meet your customers' expectations. So when you just said it's not about making it easier for you, it's about making it easier for your customers, I think, I'm in countless discussions where a business leader, a manager, someone who runs a department, you know, wants to say something about a product or title a product in a way that makes sense if you're an absolute insider to the industry, but the rest of the public and customers would have no idea what was said. And they want to say it because it makes them look like they know what they're talking about, and they're meeting. I think that a lot of the motivation is when their friends look at it, they want their friends to go, yeah, dang it, that's what I'd have said. That's it. Instead of, well, yeah, the customer's not quite as doesn't know as much as, and maybe they're looking for a Lear camper shell specifically, or maybe they're not. But now they have a choice. When it's just camper shell, there's 90 variables left open that they don't even know if they should follow this path.
Yeah, it leaves the question of how do you want to show up your competitor? Do you want them to look at your website and think, wow, they're wordy and they know what they're talking about? Or do you want them to look at your business and think, I wish I made as much money as those guys?
Yeah, right,
you know,
right.
You have to decide how you want to show up your competitor, you know?
Yeah, well, and here's how this came up for me. This is embarrassing because it's not something we do with our clients. This was my own site. So, you know, when I own a company, that sells products, and we were reviewing the site, and we were thinking about how we were going to categorize things, and so we were going out looking at the competitors and all that, and when my team brought me the categorization and the naming conventions for the competitors, and then I looked at mine, I went, uh-oh. When you look at the category titles of the competitors, it's crystal clear what you're about ready to buy. When you look at the category titles of what we came up with, they were like intentions we hoped you might think was important, but it wasn't what you were looking for, right? And then same thing, we got down to the products. I went, wait a minute. Wait. That our competitors are making it crystal clear, even before you click in, we're somehow making you guess if you should even click. And I went, what have I done? So this wasn't even a client site. This was my own site.
Right.
Yeah. And so
and normally it's always your own sites that go unanalyzed because, you know, you're so busy working on your client stuff and you come back and look at your own. And
yeah.
So I end up rebuilding my own sites like once every 6 months because like I'll build it and then I'll ignore it for 6 months because I'm working on my clients and I'll come back and I'll look at it and it'll be all, what the heck is this horrible thing?
You know? Yeah, yeah, you would have to literally have been sitting on my shoulder to know what I was even meaning here.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, how's someone going to buy this? Yeah, okay, well, I think there's a couple other reasons. So you brought up a good reason, or maybe I did. I don't remember the first point we both made, who made it. But essentially, it's easier for someone to read when they're on your site and they know what to do. They know if to take action or not. Then there's the other one is that the results, Google results, pulls your page title in, and that's what they're going to display to your user. That's your chance to sell the click. In other words, sell someone to click on your Google listing and come to you. So if you've put no thought into that, and a good way to do it is go Google your products or services and get really specific so they show up in case they're not going to, and see, would that title have convinced you, or is it just say camper shell page? You know, does it say something that a developer would have put and not a salesperson? So there's the results page, but there's also, I think we forget how much the internet is connected. You see, your content tends to be aggregated and pulled into other places, whether it's industry insider sharing one of your pages or products or blog posts into their audience, whether it's you sharing it on your Facebook or Twitter, or it's an aggregator or reader grabbing your content. And so when it grabs that content, what's it doing? Well, it's doing the same thing Google's doing. It doesn't know what you meant to say. It's not going to clean up your title to what you wish it said. It's going to put what you put there. So when 1,000 people go look at some aggregated reader that they use to follow your industry and they see your stuff, it says page or title page or home page, you know, or product number 7 or whatever instead of the descriptive title. And I'm right. Being extreme there, but I've certainly seen that.
Not really. I think an extreme reality would be that people will put new on there and they'll say,
or
so
version
new
two
shell, right, you know, or
yeah,
version 2 at least implies something, you know. What's the second one, a new
yeah, right.
The newer, you know.
Right.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, explain it as though somebody could read it in a second and have a general understanding of what it is.
Yeah. Now, if you sell products, I want to help give a little hint, a cheat sheet, if you will, for if you have products. Let's say you have products. Let's leave out services for a minute. Let's not talk about your blog post page. Let's just talk about products. If you have products and you sell them and you're wondering how you should title your products, I'm going to give you a cheat sheet. Go to Amazon. And I don't mean go to Amazon because Amazon's awesome. They are. I don't mean because every product in the world's for sale there. It is. Here's why. Amazon's search tool appears to be pretty simple. Now there's a whole bunch of algorithms in the behind the scenes, like do you do fulfillment and prime shipping and what's your ratings and all this kind of stuff. But it seems to be very strongly related to the titles. And so if you go searching for products and go searching for your products and look at what the titles are, and you'll notice typically the titles have the size of the product, they'll have the brand, they'll have any variants, you know, they'll have a use for it. And so that's a really good place to start to get context for how you might tie to a product. So tip of the day, 2-minute tip, which has taken almost 12 minutes. The 2-minute, 12-minute tip is descriptive titles, and you can use a cheat sheet. Go to Amazon and try out their search. Get an idea. Get some context. Chauncey, we have like 30, 40 seconds. Do you have anything to add?
No. I totally agree with all of that. You know, ask somebody not in your industry. That'll be the extra thing I throw in.
Yeah.
Don't turn to a coworker and ask them. Go ask your grandma.
Yeah. You know who I use is my sister, Andrea. If I send her a product page or a landing page, basically as soon as she, wherever she's reading it and it no longer makes sense or she can't figure out what it is, she just stops there. She didn't even finish reading the whole thing, and she shoots back. And I'm like, no, come on, read the whole thing, get an idea. And I started realizing, well, why make her do that? If she's halfway through the title and she doesn't get it, why don't I adjust it so it makes sense to somebody who's right. not pouring over it all day, and doesn't help that she's brutally honest and makes me cry. Okay, so we're coming up to the end of this segment, the Being Found show. We are going to be right back after this break, and you can check us out, beingfound.com.
At Orchard Nutrition Center, we keep our produce pure by bathing our fruits and vegetables with water from our multi-stage purification system, leaving it fresh, clean, and crisp. Fresh from the farm to your family's table. Orchard Nutrition Center, Cypress Square Shopping Center, Reading.
I'm Dr. Nancy Sutton-Pierce, the host of the Conscious Living Show, every Saturday, 11 to noon, here on KCNR 1460. You'll laugh, cry, and perhaps be shocked by my frank and honest conversations. I often team up with my husband, Dr. Mark Pierce, and no one makes me squirm or giggle quite like he can. We are the yin-yang, east-west, of most topics, yet you can always feel the love and respect between us. Visit DrNancySuttonPierce.com to keep this conversation going.
The Ten Tenors are coming to the Reading Civic Auditorium March 16th with their acclaimed show, Wish You Were Here, a celebration of legends featuring the music of David Bowie, Prince, Amy Winehouse, John Lennon, Michael Jackson, Freddie Mercury, Whitney Houston, and more. Fresh off their 20th anniversary world tour, the Ten Tenors return with their show, Wish You Were Here. With over 700 sold-out shows, 6 albums that have gone platinum and gold, it's the Ten Tenors. Don't miss your opportunity to experience this international singing sensation live at the Reading Civic Auditorium. Get your tickets for this soon-to-be sold-out show, the Ten Tenors, March 16th. Go to ReadingCivic.com for your tickets today. Tickets are also available at the Civic box office or by calling 229-0022.
One of the most important tenets of your life is ensuring that your loved ones are cared for even after you're gone. Having a will is important, but can be bogged down in probate court for years. What are your options? Douglas Wright, attorney at law, specializes in estate planning and probate matters. Does a living trust solve all your legal concerns? Douglas Wright will guide you through the many legal aspects of planning for your future and the future of your loved ones. Douglas Wright Law, a professional corporation, 530-243-6000 or DouglasWrightLaw.com.
Hello, I am Lance Beck, president of North State Security. Were you aware that North State Security has patrolled the streets of Reading for nearly 18,500 consecutive nights? The Pony Express has nothing on us. Through rain, sleet, snow, and blistering heat, North State Security has been the most prodigious private security agency in Northern California for 50 years. We are incredibly ecstatic, yet extraordinarily humbled by the realization of our 50th anniversary. With courage, determination, and a bountiful of integrity, my father founded this business with nothing more than an immense desire to succeed. North State Security, 50 years later, a formidable force in this region with approximately 130 licensed and properly trained security officers geared to handle any conceivable security-related need you have. Thank you to the entire North State community for making our remarkable history such a good story. North State Security, providing jobs, protecting assets. Call us at 243-0295.
I am Dan, owner of Dan's Optical Lab. For years, I've made prescription eyewear for other eye doctors throughout the North State. Now I'm opening my lab directly to the public. You can purchase the highest quality in prescription eyewear, but directly from the lab. That means you get it faster and you get it for less. I don't just sell prescription eyewear, I make it. And because I do, I have to know more about the lens materials, designs, and frames that are available. If you want the highest quality in prescription eyewear, then go where the doctors go, Dan's Optical Lab. Faster for less.
At Orchard Nutrition Center, we strive to be the gatekeepers of 100% organically grown produce. Our goal is to provide you and your family with produce that is fresh from the farm and pure, 100% organically grown. Orchard Nutrition Center, Cypress Square Shopping Center, Reading.
Good morning. You're listening to the Being Found Show. You're not being found. Who is? Well, we're going to help you be found by more customers. I'm Cloudwise Joe, with my co-host Chauncey Haworth, and let's get into it. Howdy. Okay, Chauncey, as always, there's news. I keep thinking there's not going to be news, but there's a lot of stuff going on, and so I want to jump into it. Let's jump into first the Google My Business news that's out. Let me read it, because there's actually not a ton of information out there, and this was actually released in the Google forum by Allison, who's a community manager, and this just came out yesterday. It's kind of neat because she's just basically saying, hey, everyone, I'm letting you know this is here, but it didn't, you know, it's not really something that that's being advertised or a bunch of people know about. So I mean, this is literally breaking news that we're talking about here on the show. So Allison says, Google My Business listing owners have had the ability to add and edit their own menu links. So she's talking about restaurants who have a Google My Business listing. And what she's saying is businesses, they've always had the ability, or restaurants have always had the ability to link out to third-party menus, either a menu service or, you know, some kind of link like that. And you could link out to a menu so people could check out what you have in your restaurant before they come. So she's saying they've always been able to do that, and you can do that in the dashboard. She says now, though, in addition to using that, which is an API, I'm paraphrasing a little bit here, which is an API for developers, listing owners will be able to showcase their menus directly on their Google listing. This is for consumers on mobile only, I think, and it actually adds a menu tab on the Google My Listing. You'll have to explain to us a little bit more what it looks like and what we know about it, Chauncey, but essentially, in short, you now can have your menu of your dishes and entrees, I think including pricing, description, and other things right there on Google Listing. So when someone Googles you, they don't even go to your website. Because remember, Google isn't a utility. It's not their job to make sure your website has traffic. They are a website. They want all the users to stay there. So you either play with Google's rules and let Google work with you, or Google goes to work against you. So this is one of those things where, you know, why not, if they're going to try to keep people there on their site, why not help them out and have your menu there so people can see your wonderful food? All right, so what do we know about this thing, Chauncey?
Well, when they're saying that on your Google My Business listing, where that shows up is two places. It shows up in the Google results when you type in a business name. So let's say we type in Chauncey's Restaurant, we would get it over on the right. Or let's say I specialized in hot dogs and I was the local hot dog master. If somebody were to search hot dogs, in that case, I might show up on the right as well sometimes if Google has connected me well enough there. The other place that it shows up is when you search for a business in Google Maps. It shows up there. And so it's saying basically when you scroll down, over the past couple of weeks we've talked a little bit about being able to add videos to that and being able to add blog posts to that. You know, you remember a couple of weeks back we were talking about adding a blog post that expired after 7 days and so on and so forth, and this is now allowing you to put a menu link.
Wow. So here's the question that comes up, and I don't know if we know this or if maybe you kind of answered this, but, you know, with my Google My Business listing, I get to put a category and it knows my website, and so it kind of figures out that, say, someone's looking for a locksmith, it starts to figure out that I should show up as a locksmith. So is this menu going to help you show up? Like you said, if your menu is obviously hot dogs and corn dogs and french fries, Does that mean that when someone's looking for a good hot dog nearby, that that just helped you show up better? Because now Google is aware that your menu is that, and it knows more about you. And when Google knows more about you, it shows you. What is that? Do you think that's what's going to happen here?
Well, unfortunately, the only answer that we can ever really give when it comes to Google is probably. Yeah. You know,
said,
that probably
like a true
will.
SEO.
Probably. And even if it's not immediately, chances are at this point Google is testing it out. If they like the results of it, then they'll apply it to the algorithm.
Gotcha.
So okay. Get in there, utilize it ethically, Google will like it, and then all your hard work will pay off in an instant when they put out an update and all of a sudden.
Yeah. Okay, so Allison goes on to say that there's some limitations to this feature. So the feature will be available if the Google My Business listing is not currently connected to a third-party provider. So this is interesting. Google is going into competition with the third-party providers of menu links. So you have to shut down your menu link, apparently, if you want your menu to show up in Google. Also, it's currently right now only in English-speaking locales. So, you know, I guess go – and I think they have to recognize that you're a restaurant. So you and I aren't going to get it, right? So, well, you might because you should have Chauncey's restaurant.
But Chauncey's hot dog shop.
Yeah, I can't cook anything. I could burn cereal. So go to your Google My Business listing. Log in, see if it's shown up. Keep checking in. Also, go to the Google forum and look up Allison underscore GMB, the community manager, and hit her up and see if she can tell you more about it. We'll certainly keep watching, and we'll see what happens. In our giant, vast audience, Allison may have more people talking to her than she can imagine now, right? Right, Chauncey?
Totally, and we might shut the site down.
We'll shut Google down. Okay, we're exaggerating. Okay, so here's the next news. There is a new feature in Google. This new feature is called Google Audience Report. Do me a favor, Chauncey, let me read this real quick, and then let me read the article. See, the article was in Search Engine Journal. The title is Google Analytics Introduces New Audiences Report, and that's Search Engine Journal. Let me just read real quick what they say this is. Essentially, well, I'm not going to paraphrase. Let me read it. A custom audience is a group of visitors that have met a predefined condition. For example, audience can be created for new visitors, returning visitors, past purchasers, users who have visited a specific section on a site, and so on. So essentially what this is, I think I understand this is going to let you do, is you might say, you know what, I really want to know what new users who go to my contact page do. I want to know, do they bounce? Do they purchase? Do they convert? All that kind of stuff. So now I can react to that. So essentially there's this new menu where you can set up that predefined type of user, and now Google will report to you about what that user type is doing. Now, that's pretty new. I mean, or that's pretty amazing. I've always felt restricted by Google's definition of users. You know, it's kind of new user, back again user, mobile user, desktop user, you know, it's kind of the basic things, but there's so much more we need to know. We don't know what's happening when a returning user hits the contact us page. Maybe they had to show up four or five times and a returning user hits it a lot more than a new user. I mean, contacts a lot more. So now does that mean we change the content to be more favorable to that returning user? Or does that mean we have to make up for it and add some different content to get that new user to engage with us?
Right.
I babbled a lot there, Chauncey. What do you think about this new feature? And it's
brand new. Well, the initial thing that I thought of when I saw it was user intentions and being able to separate that. So we live in this day and age. So let's say I'm a service industry and I come to your house and I wash your car. I
Will
have
you?
Those services. No. I have those services, and I have a blog, an informative blog. And we want the traffic from the informative blog, and we want people to use that, but those are not all necessarily customers, potential customers. So we can track this sort of usability of the two sections of our site. Maybe a better way to explain it would be, I'm a carpet cleaner. I offer that service. I also offer spot and stain remover as a product. So I can track the people coming to my website as potential clients of my service and the people coming to my website as potential clients of my products. And their intentions are going to be drastically different. The way they interact is going to be drastically different. And we'll be able to see that. Another thing that came to mind is, let's say you have a news magazine and you have multiple categories and you want to know which categories people are responding to the best. You can now really do that quickly and easily. Or let's say you want to know the trends. You can really sort of have a better understanding of what topics have been trending over the past year instead of having to really sort of put in a lot of effort of weeding through the past 5 years.
Do you think that people wait for me to hurry up and finish talking so that you can add specific, helpful information?
I'd like to think that.
Yeah, because I have a feeling that's what happens. Yeah, I mean, I think you nailed it, and not that you need me to think that, because you nailed it. But, yeah, it's I think this might be a whole it's weird, because this is a little quiet release, a feature release, and it just, you kind of got to log in to see it, and it says beta there, and or it says new. And to me, it seems important enough they should have said more about it. So, anyways, you are...
Wait, here's our example for the Being Found show. Half the people coming to the Being Found show would be listening to podcasts, and the other half would be reading articles. And there's a drastically different intent and interaction going on there.
Brilliant. As usual. You've been listening to the Being Found show. You can check us out at beingfound.com. We're going to break, and we're going to be right back.
It's a great time to drive a new Kia. Don't miss the President's Day sale going on now at Redding Kia. Kia, America's best value.
Get yours today at Redding Kia through February 28th. Redding Kia, reddingkia.com.
If you're looking into a remodeled kitchen, bathroom, or backyard patio, there's a lot of choices, but only one leader. Estate Granite and Things.
This is Carl Bott. My tuber has such a professional attitude and a can-do work ethic that makes him a joy to work with. Mike and his crew worked to have our new kitchen finished in 5 days while Linda and I went on vacation. We came back to a true work of art.
Hi, this is Brian Salato, broker and co-owner of The Real Estate Group. In today's competitive market, I think what's important is that the house is dialed in and turnkey. And what's important is that the kitchen has been renovated, the bathrooms have been renovated, granite, beautiful cabinetry. Those things make a significant difference.
Mike at Estate Granite has an eye for detail, an attention to perfection, and a quality build crew that are masters of their craft. Mike was there from start to finish.
Hi, this is Mike from Estate Granite and Things. I know how important quality to a homeowner is, so give me a call at 241-STONE or come by our showroom at 4900 Mountain Lakes Boulevard, Estate Granite and Things, or visit us at estategranite.com.
Lift off. Astronaut Bob and Drop here. There's been a lot of talk about water found on Mars. Why would you go all the way to Mars for water when we have the best tasting water at Mount Shasta? It comes from our protected springs and is delivered right to your door.
Great landing, Bob.
Hey, where are you going with that? Those Martians are stealing my water. Guess we have some new customers. And anyone can get Mount Shasta spring water if they call us at 1-800-922-6227.
Pure and simple. Naturally, the best. Mount Shasta spring water.
Analog living in a digital world. Every week on Boomer Tech Radio, we offer up the latest tech news you can use. Hi, it's Bob Belongi. It's even easier to listen to the show now that we're on iTunes. You'll find our archives and articles at BoomerTechRadio.com, and the show is streamed live at KCNR1460.com. We review the latest goodies, gadgets, and gizmos, and make sure you are up to date on the latest tech trends. Boomer Tech Radio, Saturday from noon to 2 p.m. on KCNR 1460, and now available as a podcast on iTunes.
When you're looking to add a pet to your family, Haven Humane Society is a place to start. Hi, this is Mark from Haven to tell you that shelter pets make the best pets. With kittens, puppies, dogs, cats, bunnies, guinea pigs, hamsters, snakes, birds, and more, Haven has a pet that is the right fit for your family. We also provide education, training, spaying and neutering, dog licensing, and so much more. If you're looking for a way to help, our amazing volunteers have fun with the animals while helping us to save lives. For more information, call 241-1653 or visit havenhumane.org. Like us on Facebook and follow our progress as we work towards a day with no more homeless pets in the North State.
It's a great time to drive a 2018 Kia Stinger GT. With a 365-horsepower twin-turbo and cutting-edge design, Kia Stinger is guaranteed to blow your mind.
Test drive one today during the President's Day sale. Redding Kia, reddingkia.com.
Back to the Being Found Show. I'm your host, Cloudwise Joe. We've got Chauncey Haworth, the co-host and smart one here. All right, Chauncey, our audience has all kinds of questions, and I don't know about you, but I get asked questions all the time. When someone finds out that I know anything about the Internet, there's questions. And so I picked a couple. They're kind of oldie but goodies, they're kind of the questions that I keep getting asked. And so what do you think we answer these questions for the audience?
All right, shoot.
All right. Okay, so first one. If I don't have a website already, where do I start? And I think I know why these questions are never finally answered, because they're tough. I mean, there is probably, for every business out there, there's a different way to build a website. or a different place to start. So what do we do to make sense of this so that businesses really can find a starting ground?
Well, chances are if you own a business, you know other business owners. So I would ask them about their experiences with websites and who they work with. Mm-hmm. You know, it's probably the first kickoff point.
Mm-hmm.
And then if not, you know, you can product shop around in every town. There's a lot of great local businesses creating websites. And they're all going to be willing to give you a free estimate.
Okay.
And if they don't give you a free estimate, well, then you need to move on. And I think that's really the best place. But I would say word of mouth is the best place to start, you know. And if you don't really know any other businesses, your first step might be to go join the local Chamber of Commerce and sit on a few meetings and get to know a few people and ask around.
Okay. So here's my answer. I think those are perfect, right? Because ultimately, getting a website built still is people working with people, right? So in a way,
absolutely.
Where do you start? Well, you start the way you'd start with anything. Then let me take the next step there, because now I've met with a web developer or a company and I want a website. Well, I can speak from experience here because I've been on both sides of this. I have written very large checks for websites and I've been paid very large checks for websites. And there's a common theme that I've seen on both sides of that, and that is that the person asking for the website and paying for the website knows least about what they need or want. They tend to not be educated on what they need or want. So let me give you some advice, audience, on how you enter that discussion very educated and very sure of what you want. And it starts, and I'm sorry I got to keep going back to this, but it starts with three rules. These three rules you can write down, and they're always, as far as I can tell, they're always the lens at which you look at whether you're going to get or how to deal with your website, get a website or whatever. And that is that you meet customer expectations, you meet Google's expectations with your website. So when it's built, it meets your customer's expectations, Google's expectations. And then the last one is that it's built to earn revenue, not just be a popular site. So one of the ways you can prepare yourself for that is to go Google what's currently showing up at the top of Google for your type of services, products, or industries, and pick yourself a couple websites that are like you, that fit like you, that you think are doing a good job of giving customers what they want. And chances are, if it's showing up near the top of Google and it's your industry, chances are that it is giving customers what they want, because Google tends to use customers' interactions as one of some of the ranking factors. And so you get yourself four or five websites, and then what you can do is you kind of get a sample of those, and you go to your web developer and you say, here's my industry, here's sites that are doing really well. I'll need a site that portrays the same information and allows the customers to get the same things that they're looking for as are on these websites. I'll also need them to have the same amount of content and things like that, so Google likes them. I'll need it to be as fast or faster than this website, right? So in other words, you go in with samples of websites that are effective. Now, this is different than searching around for websites in completely different industries that you love. You know, if you're in the construction business and you just love a website for selling guitars because you think it looks cool or it's got the right colors, no, don't worry about the guitar website. You want to work with the construction websites. That's going to make everybody involved more aware of what you're looking for. And then my last bit of advice is, it's just realize it's not about you. It's really not about you. You are not building Taj Mahal. And when your website launches, that's only half the job. So don't wait. Don't try to get that thing perfect. Don't try to wait until everything is exactly what you think it should be, because ultimately you can't figure out if Google and your customers like it until you launch it. So really figure that half your budget isn't for the day it goes live. Half your budget is for the day it goes live and on. So you want to figure half your budgets to get it built and half your budgets to change it or adjust it. And little secret here, you're going to have to spend money every month for the rest of your business life on that website. I'm sorry to tell you that. It's the truth. You mow your lawns, you wash your windows, you have your bathrooms clean in your office. You got to do the same thing with your website. So I don't know if that helps, but what do you think?
Yeah, I got something to throw in there. Good. I'm constantly getting people coming to me and bringing their competitors, because a lot of them are local businesses, and they're bringing in their own local competitors.
Yeah.
Now, most of my clients that I work with are not in Reading, the town I live in, which is a fairly small town. It's, you know, 100,000 people, but. But when I do get a Reading client, they're always bringing in local Reading people. Or they're wanting this guitar website, like you're saying. And so my suggestion would be, you know, get your brother or your sister, somebody who's computer savvy as a consumer, but not in your industry, and tell them to go search up websites like yours in San Jose.
Yeah.
Not in Reading. Go to a more competitive market.
New York, you know, or L.A. or San Jose. Great point. I'm so glad you said that. Yeah.
And you will find more fancy websites that are maybe a little more cosmopolitan or whatever you're after if you like that guitar website. But you're also going to find websites that compete.
Okay. So next question. And we've got about 2 minutes to answer this question, maybe 3 minutes. Why do I need a website?
I can answer this. If you don't know why you need a website, I'm a little curious as to where you've been for the last decade, for one.
So let me follow up with that. My customers are an older generation. They call us. We're word of mouth. We advertise, on TV, right? So these are, I swear to God, up until today, I still hear those. Or, yeah, I know I need a website. And this is probably the other half of the question I hear. I know I need a website, but is it really worth it to do it now?
Okay, let me answer all of those. For one, my clientele is older, and they call on the phone. I don't know how to put this nicely, but you're going to probably want to bring in some newer clients because your client base is dwindling.
Yeah.
Right? And I don't know about your older clients, but my aunt and uncle, I was there last night for my birthday dinner, and they have Alexa. And they were sitting there talking, and they jokingly referred to Alice when they want to talk smack about it and don't want her to hear them.
Mm-hmm.
Because if they say Alexa, it starts saying, hey, what? And so they call it Alice when they're talking about it.
How funny.
And, you know, they listen to the radio and they say, hey, Alexa, volume 2, and they totally interact with this thing. And they're in their 70s.
Mm-hmm.
So that first one's kind of moot. The other ones all kind of fall into the same category of, well, I advertise in the newspaper. Why do I need a website? Well, I advertise on TV. Why do I need a website? Well, the two of those just answered your question right there. TV and newspaper are different advertising channels, as is a website. So if you only want to advertise on one channel and only reap the rewards of advertising down one channel and not have the growth of the other channels, well, I guess power to you.
Yeah, and I think there's another part to that, because what you're starting to see, and I got about 1 minute to answer this, what I think another part of that is the concept is, well, I have a Facebook page, or I'm on Twitter, or I'm on Instagram, and so why would I also need a website, right? I'm digitally there, why would I need a website? And I want to answer that one, because I've also struggled with that sometimes. I think, why put the effort, you know? There's a Facebook page for this or whatever. But here's the thing. Ultimately, here's what it comes down to. There's about as many Google searches a day as there are people on the internet. People are using search. So for no other reason, people are using search, and the more space on the search result page that you can take up, the more likely you are to be found by a customer. So when you have a website, each page of your website is another chance to show up in Google search results. Now, your Facebook page may show up. Maybe an Instagram will show up. Maybe something, a directory listing will show up. That is all true. But ultimately, your website is where you get to put effort into showing up in that Google results page. And you want to show up as many times as you can, because every space you take and every space you knock someone else down is that more, much more chance that you're going to be found by more buying customers. Okay, Chauncey, this was a great show. We are coming to the end of the show. If you want to follow up, watch more of the show, come on back to the Being Found show.
The news is brought to you on KCNR, Shasta, Redding, by Tobacco and Brew. Come see their newly remodeled store at 2143 Hilltop Drive in Redding. Tobacco and Brew, open 7 days a week.
Spearfishing has or will strike your business, wreaking havoc on your employees, brand, and your bottom line. Spearfishing can't be stopped by traditional email security solutions because messages appear to be legitimate from your boss, a trusted colleague, or a vendor asking you to wire money, confirm login credentials, or worse. Barracuda Sentinel is artificial intelligence for real-time spear phishing and cyber fraud defense. Reclaim your email in minutes with zero impact on network performance. Visit barracuda.com/AI.
Is negative content or comments on the web affecting your personal or professional reputation? Unfavorable comments, embarrassing pictures, videos, legal documents, and bad tweets can ruin your personal life, your career, or your business. Reputation.com can protect your good name. It's easy to squash the unfair attacks with our patented system. Call right now for a free expert reputation analysis. Call 800-651-4888. 800-651-4888.
Norman Rockwell's three sons have now withdrawn from a lawsuit against a Massachusetts museum that wants to sell off one of their father's paintings.
The Rockwell family says the intention of the lawsuit was to prevent the Berkshire Museum in Pittsfield from auctioning Shuffleton's Barbershop, likely removing it from public view. The museum last week reached an agreement with the state attorney general that would allow a sale that would keep it on public display. The family said because of that agreement, their objective has now been achieved, and therefore they do not wish to participate in further legal proceedings.
That is correspondent Keith Peters reporting. In a rare move, the Justice Department has now asked the U.S. Supreme Court to leapfrog the federal appeals process and overturn a lower court injunction that's been blocking the White House from ending the DACA program, the one for the so-called Dreamers, young people who were brought into the country illegally as children. The White House wants to end DACA next month. Breaking news and analysis at townhall.com. Kuwait's ruling emir says his oil-rich nation would give $1 billion in loans and another billion in direct investments to help rebuild Iraq.
Sheikh Sabah al-Ahmad al-Sabah's announcement is in many ways stunning. Many residents of Kuwait remember how Iraq, under dictator Saddam Hussein, invaded their country only a generation ago. It shows Kuwait's deep desire to see its northern neighbor have a stable government after years of unrest following the 2003 U.S.-led invasion that toppled Saddam.
That's correspondent Jeremy House. Overall, Iraq says it's seeking $88+ billion in aid from donors to help rebuild. Authorities say the former student accused of fatally shooting 17 people at a Florida high school had excelled at marksmanship in the school's air rifle program. It received a grant from the National Rifle Association, which gave nearly $2.2 million to schools across 30 states as of 2016. More on these stories can be found at townhall.com.
The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Hello, my darlings, and welcome back to Radio Wasteland. I'm your host, Chauncey Hallworth, and this is my other host, Sean.
Hello.
And we talk to you about things like the paranormal and rampant Sasquatchery.
Which does not fall under the category of the paranormal.
Sasquatch doesn't?
No, it does. I'm just making
just rampant Sasquatchery doesn't?
Right.
I see.
Yeah. I do like that. I like that phrase there.
Yeah, that'll be the spinoff show.
Yeah.
As you can maybe tell, I'm a little hoarse, and I'm actually one of the, when I was little, I wanted to be the sound effects guy for cartoons. I was like way obsessed with Mel Blanc, and I wanted to make sound effects, and one of the ones that I can do is make a horse sound, but I can't do it
when you're hoarse.
When I'm a little hoarse. I'm going to try though. All right.
Okay.
So this might not be good.
We've got nothing to lose.
All right.
Oh, God.
No, it went all pterodactyl.
Oh, yeah.
All right. No, it's not happening. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So big news this week is the Olympics. You've been watching the Olympics, Sean?
I watched a little bit of figure skating with my mom.
With your mom? That seems to be a pastime of a lot of families, figure skating with the mom.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's pretty impressive. I mean, I can't go
impressive.
On record and say, like, oh, I'm too cool for figure skating or anything.
Oh, totally. I would totally break an ankle. You know, there was a bit of controversy in the news this morning about Adam Rippon not scoring as high as others, even though he skated flawlessly. But I read the article that was basically saying he wasn't doing the difficult stuff the other guys were doing.
Right, which is weird. That it's a controversy, because I heard the announcers talking at the time, and I thought that was kind of a given, that
he replaced
the quadruple whatevers with the triple things.
Well,
axles.
I think he has a lot of support because he, you know, is openly gay, and I think that there's a big community out there who are supporting him because of that. And so they're thinking maybe he's getting knocked down, for one, for being American. So half of our country is probably thinking he's getting knocked down because he's American, and the other half is probably thinking he's getting knocked down maybe for being gay.
Hmm.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah. I personally watch a lot of this stuff, and I definitely thought that the Koreans coming in together was interesting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I assume you heard about this?
Yeah. And that's, I mean, even if you don't watch the Olympics, that's, like, interesting from a political geopolitics perspective type thing. So
yeah, I had somebody telling me that they felt that the Koreans coming in together meant that they were totally allied and that we no longer had our connection over there, but I didn't really feel that was the case.
I think that's reading a little bit into it.
I mean,
You know, the Olympics is all about the cheesy symbolic stuff. That's kind of the whole point of it. So it's like, I doubt any big trade policy is going to get hashed out over it.
Right.
They're not going to end the Olympics and be like, oh, and by the way, North Korea and us, we've been talking and we've decided to end the fighting or whatever.
Right.
And get rid of all the machine gun nests and we're one country again.
Right.
That's not going to happen.
I don't think it's going to happen either. I think if any shadiness is going on, it's probably that the North Koreans know that the United States is backing off during the Olympics and maybe trying to get a little bit of sway of support in the meantime.
Yeah.
You know, which, you know, smart move, but I don't think it's going to make much difference.
Well, I am generally cynical and averse to, like, cheesiness, but I have to say just the Olympics in general, and I don't watch it a lot, but just the idea of it, all these nations coming together and just competing in a friendly way.
Yeah.
It's always kind of like, aw.
Yeah, it is.
You know,
it
that's just, it's so nice.
Yeah.
Really. And every time it happens, I feel like, for however long it goes on, just, you know, a little bit more optimistic about practically everything. So.
And I think it's good for patriotism as well. You know, I think that that people, regardless of what side you're on politically and so on and so forth, we're all rooting for the American to win because, you know, we don't want those lousy other countries to win. I also found the Russians to be interesting.
I haven't heard much about this.
Okay, so they're coming in as the, like, United Athletes of Russia. They're not coming in as the Russians. Because of the doping scandals over the past couple Olympics, part of their punishment was that they can't compete as a country, and any medals they win will not go to their country's tally.
Oh. Huh.
But any of the Russian athletes who were able to pass all the tests were still allowed to compete in the Olympics for medals for themselves. And so that's why they're marching under an Olympic flag, and they came in wearing gray jackets.
Hmm.
And, you know, they're, the article I was reading is just all, oh, they're wearing gray jackets and not representing their country. And I'm like, well, you know, gray jacket does kind of represent Russia.
That
you know?
Is true.
But it's a little dystopian.
Even so, I can't imagine there's that much precedent for that. I was unaware of this, and this is
actually. They not only verified that they had been doing it, but they verified that they had done it in London as well.
Right.
And so, yeah, they definitely got smacked down.
It's pretty severe.
Yeah. But I definitely love the Olympics. I watched the one last night where it was the first American to ever medal in the luge.
Hmm. Yeah.
And the luge is without a doubt one of the craziest sports ever.
Yes.
Because I don't know how to say this in a radio-friendly sort of way. But whether you're a man or a woman, you're going down this thing at extreme speeds with your most sensitive parts going first. You know, that's terrifying.
This
in bobsledding, you're at least in the fetal position. You know, you can be under the illusion that you're going to tuck and roll or something, you know, but not in the luge. You know, if somebody throws a 2x4 in there, we're done.
So every so often at, like, water parks and stuff, you know, every so often there'll be a tragedy when someone misuses the inner tubes or something and goes down a slide in the wrong way and dies or something or gets really badly hurt.
Right.
And luge is just like, if someone saw that and was just like, what if that was a sport?
Right.
So,
yeah,
luge is hardcore.
Yeah, and I mean, Winter Olympics in general is hardcore stuff, you know, without a doubt.
All right. Well, there was the Olympics. We were talking beforehand about SpaceX a little bit, and that's another huge thing that's been in the news. I just wanted to say those two boosters touching down simultaneously was ridiculous.
Surreal. Absolutely surreal.
Yeah.
Yeah. I find that, you know, it really kind of goes with the Olympics because I find it incredibly inspiring on a humanity level. But a lot of flat earthers apparently were complaining that it's a big hoax. And I got to say, if there was any part of that that was fake, those two rockets landing was like That looked like a science fiction movie from the 60s. I didn't even know this was possible, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy. All right, so we have a guest tonight.
Oh.
Our guest is Stephen Bassett from Paradigm Research Group. And we're going to be talking UFOs. We've had a lot of UFOs this year since we switched years.
Yeah. Well, there was that big UFO revelation in December, and I think we're just we're catching up still. This guy's a big deal. I'm really excited.
I am excited, too. All right. You're listening to Radio Wasteland. When we come back, we're going to get on the phone Stephen Bassett from the Paradigm Research Group.
Pleasure, ZZ Tush. A full-on tribute to that little old band from Texas. Live in concert at Wind River Resort and Casino Friday, March 9th. Northern California's premier ZZ Top tribute band, ZZ Tush, brings it live and loud, playing all their greatest hits and then some. Got Me Under Pressure, Cheap Sunglasses, Legs. ZZ Tush brings the ZZ Top experience to the stage. They got the moves, the music, the beards, the shades, and of course, the furry guitars. Purchase your tickets now at the River Club or WindRiver.com. Tickets for this are just $12.50 each or a table of 10 for $100. So if a good old time is what you're after, then you ought to come out. These boys give you the whole package. ZZ Tush live and loud at Wind River Resort and Casino Friday, March 9th at 7:30 p.m. A good rockin' time will be had by all. Must be 21 to attend. Download the Wind River app on Google Play and the Apple Store. Concerts are better at the river.
I'm Dr. Nancy Sutton Pierce, the host of the Conscious Living Show, every Saturday, 11 to noon, here on KCNR 1460. You'll laugh, cry, and perhaps be shocked by my frank and honest conversations. I often team up with my husband, Dr. Mark Pierce, and no one makes me squirm or giggle quite like he can. We are the yin-yang, east-west, of most topics, yet you can always feel the love and respect between us. Visit DrNancySuttonPierce.com to keep this conversation going.
On Friday, March 9th, at the new Sheraton Reading Hotel at the Sundial Bridge, the Trade School is hosting the Electrician's Ball 2018, an elegant evening of dining along with the Craftsman's Art Auction. This fundraiser supports scholarships and technology upgrades. Please help us create rewarding career opportunities in the skilled trades. Millions of jobs are waiting. Our young people deserve a prosperous future. Visit ShastaBE.com/events and register or call 221-5556. All are welcome.
The Trade School, the Shasta Builders Exchange. Train, build, succeed.
One cold, dark winter's night in 1968, a small mark security unit crept along the alleyway of a medical complex in Reading. The driver, Archie Beck, a 49-year-old purple-hearted Pearl Harbor survivor, veteran of World War II, had just introduced the private security industry to Northern California. For a soldier critically wounded on the morning of December 7, 1941, North State Security's creation was one man's dream becoming a reality. I am Lance Beck, Archer's son and current president and CEO of North State Security. The early days of this business were challenging, tough on us kids, listening to local miscreants bellowing, "Hey, rent a cop," at Dad. Arch worked unbelievably hard, 20-hour days as a salesman, guard, and mechanic, while Mom served as the dispatcher. The decades have flown by. North State Security celebrates 50 years of providing protective services throughout this region. North State Security at 243-0295. Trust us for all of your security-related needs. Once again, that's North State Security at 243-0295.
All right, welcome back to Radio Wasteland and our guest, Stephen Bassett from the Paradigm Research Group. We got you there with us, Stephen.
Yes, I am.
How are you doing this evening?
I'm doing just fine.
So I'm really kind of excited about this show, but I'm going to start with kind of the boring stuff that I'm sure you've answered 1,000 times, but it'll be new and exciting to
our users. Can you explain to us a little bit of what the Paradigm Research Group is and what you guys do there?
It's a political activist organization. The name is a little confusing, but it was set up when I registered as a lobbyist with Congress on the ET issue back in 96. And I signed up to represent a number of groups that were researching the subject. So it's called the Paradigm Research Group, but it's a political activist organization, and it has one primary goal, and that is to end, used to be called the UFO cover-up, which I have come to prefer to call the truth embargo. And then with the announcement to the American people, a very simple idea to the American people by the President of the United States that there's an extraterrestrial presence engaging us, has been for some time, and they have been denied that information for national security reasons, but now we're telling you. That's it. That's the capital D disclosure. After that, well, things will get quite interesting.
Well, personally, I do not find the name to be all that misleading. I mean, when you know what it's about yeah. switching the paradigm, so it totally fits.
It would be a large paradigm shift there, yeah.
Right, so...
Oh, yeah. No, and I got the paradigm in there. That's the word of the century. If you can't spell paradigm, you're going to have a problem.
Right.
A lot of people can't.
So you lobby. So you're basically physically going down and confronting our representatives, saying, hey, we need this to happen?
I've done that, but again, political activism takes all manner of forms. So PRG has done all kinds of things. It's met with people on the Hill, but Capitol Hill in Congress right now has not been for some time particularly useful.
Right. Yeah.
I also hold conferences, lobby the media. Has had multiple projects. So it's using whatever would help advance the activist movement. And like any major activist movement, there are many moving parts. And that's the nature of it for the last 21 years. So lobbying is really just a small part.
I have to admit, though, I'm really curious about the response you get from lobbying. When you walk in there, are you getting people laughing you out? Are you getting them denying it with a wink? You know, what kind of response are you getting from these politicians?
I have never been laughed out or gotten that kind of response by anyone I was meeting with directly. I don't know what people do privately, but...
Right.
She was pretty mature, relatively mature by the time I got involved in 96. So, and I'm, again, I'm suit, tie, all the usual stuff. It's just not, this doesn't happen much. And even less now. I mean, the issue is way mature now. So,
yeah.
But even by 96, the number of people that knew that ET presence was real was extremely large. That doesn't mean that they were going to talk about it to their friends, coworkers, certainly do something formally about it in the open. But privately, they knew. And so the whole embargo and ridicule program that had been underway since the 1950s was already losing its steam at that point. And now it doesn't happen very often, but it does happen on occasion. But there's always going to be some people that are the last to know.
Right.
So this must be a pretty auspicious time to be you then, what with all the stuff yeah. coming out last December about UFO programs and so forth. I have to think that you're seeing your goal as being probably closer than it ever has.
There have been some times over the last 20 years when things look good. And I've talked about that. And if you're an activist and things are starting to go that way, then you tend to really project that. And there have been times when I thought that it could happen pretty soon, and I gave reasons for that. And there have been times when it was just not moving forward at all. And that's the nature of major activist movements. Mm-hmm. When you're trying to convince the government to do something it doesn't want to do on a very large level, it is very difficult. But right now, I would say what I'm seeing is unprecedented, and if things continue at the pace that they're on right now, I don't see how the truth embargo can make it through the year. I've been wrong before on that. And things can happen. His history can throw some real big curveballs your way.
Oh, totally. Topic deflection, I'm sure, is a big one. And we're sitting on the cusp of a lot of potentially deflecting topics.
Oh, all the time. I mean, any time. Right. And it usually has something to do with somebody blowing something up.
Right.
Most
yeah.
of the time, that's what it's involved in.
Yeah, the louder it is, the better, I guess.
That's right. But this year was extremely promising. And I'm encouraging people to pay close attention. They go to my website, paradigmresearchgroup.org. They can sign up for PRG's updates, and I send out periodic updates about what's going down.
So I'm a little curious about the media's role in this. I'm sure we feel that the media is suppressing this, but do you think they're suppressing this under order, or do you think they're suppressing this out of not believing it because of actions that the government has done? Like, I don't know if I'm explaining that very well, but do you think the media doesn't believe it, or do you think they're denying it out of being ordered to deny it?
This is a very complex question. The truth embargo, which is 70 years on now, roughly, is a very complex and significant thing. A policy of the United States government to do something that I'm amazed they pulled it off. And I think they probably are too. But in order to prevent the American people, mainly American society, from knowing, formally knowing, that there's an extraterrestrial presence, they had to jump through a lot of hoops.
Right.
And without question, that one of the big hoops was the media had to be contained. It had to be limited somehow. And it started way back. The early years would have been very important. Initially, they didn't have anything like they're facing now. It's 1947 to 1953.
And this is off Roswell. We're considering the start of this.
We'll start with Roswell.
Yeah. Yeah.
We'll start with the sighting burst that occurred in early 47, of course, the Roswell event and so forth. Mm-hmm. There are three television networks. They do 15 minutes of news a night. Mm-hmm. They're new. They're under FCC control. Meaning they have to have access to the airways, but those airways are people's airways. And there's radio, but not exactly a lot of news on radio either. People get their news in that era from newspapers.
Right.
The newspaper in their town. And if you live in a small town, they got a tiny little newspaper. But then that newspaper will pick up articles or information through the wires, like UPI, AP, and so forth. So a national-type story will get covered in the major papers, New York Times, Times, and so forth, Washington Post, and then picked up by the AP, and then it'll get picked up by these other papers. So the first thing you had to do at that time was to get with the publishers of the major papers and get them on board. And if you got them on board, just that was probably enough to provide a lot of containment of the issue and prevent it from picking up picking up speed and becoming a problem for them.
Because there's a definite bottleneck there.
Yeah, you have to consider the time. I mean, again, the truth embargo starts to get formulated between 47 and 52, gets real serious, 53. During that period, this is right after World War II. The United States was preeminent. The military was very well considered by the American people, obviously. You had a five-star general as president.
Yeah, and an economic boom going on.
Economic boom. And so Eisenhower or his people go to the publishers of the Times or the whatever, these major papers, and says, in the interest of national security, we don't want this subject to be covered much. We want it to be limited. because we don't want this to develop.
And during now, World War II, they'd have been used to following orders.
Exactly. They already been, yeah, they've been doing that. They've been helping out. This is all national security. And then, of course, remember, in 50, the Korean War gets underway. So 50 and 55, roughly, we're actually in a war footing with the communists, not just anyone, but with communists, those bad communists. And so it just would not have been difficult. We have no record of this. No memoirs have emerged from any of these publishers or major editors as to what might have been said. I can assure you that there was no paper trail. You know, they weren't exchanging letters. They probably sent people out to meet with them on behalf of the president. So it was easy to get going, in my view. History hopefully will find out the details.
1 second there. Stephen, we're coming up on our first commercial break. We have a lot more questions to ask you. You're listening to Stephen Bassett from the Paradigm Research Group here on Radio Wasteland. Come on back.
Get that siesta or you'll miss the fiesta. Head on over to Tortilla Flats on Park Marina Drive, a friendly cantina with pretty señoritas that serve up dishes that taste as good as they look. The choices are endless. Enchiladas rancheros, fajita or chili verde burritos, chicken or beef piccata. Try our mouthwatering seafood enchiladas or burritos served with Tortilla Flats' own Spanish white cream sauce. All this and more served 7 days a week, 11 a.m. to 9 p.m. Dinners are served with beans, rice, albóndiga soup or salad and complimentary chips and salsa. Tortilla Flats is a perfect place to end your day. Our popular happy hour is 4 to 6 p.m. with $2 tacos, half-off appetizers, and daily drink specials. Tortilla Flats even has a private party room for groups up to 30. Call for details. The next time you crave Mexican food, try Tortilla Flats, Redding's oldest Mexican restaurant where we serve the best margaritas in town. Tortilla Flats, 2800 Park Marina Drive, 1 mile south of the Sundial Bridge, where the fiesta never ends.
Hi, I'm Sharon Clark of Home Helpers. It's amazing to look back at all the families we've touched since 2004, but our clients say it best.
I want to express my deep appreciation for the love and support you and your...
So fortunate to have an organization like Home Helpers.
You never know how much your contribution meant or how greatly you touched our lives.
Thank you so much for helping me care for my husband.
After hearing what it's meant to them, I truly can't imagine doing anything else. When you need help for your loved one, choose Home Helpers. There is no place like home.
What shall we do about them?
Join Aaron Ryan, Bill Cundiff, and Bob Martin for We the People Radio every Sunday from noon till 2. Our interviews on them give you the whole story rather than the mainstream media soundbites.
Here on KCNR 1460 AM, we've got the experts on politics, environmental craziness, veterans affairs, property rights, Agenda 21, foreign affairs, and everything in between.
The archives are always available online at wethepeopleradio.us.
It's the most fun you can have while talking about them.
Join us this Sunday at noon for We the People. You'll hear great authors and commentators, professors and scientists, activists and military experts, researchers and whistleblowers, all spending time to inform us about their areas of expertise. We the People, brought to you by Team Power of Shasta Lake, your local Kubota and John Deere dealer. Call them at 530-226-9226. We the People on AM 1460 KCNR.
We're Billy and Patrick for Redding Kia, and as George Washington said as he was crossing the Delaware,
it's time for the annual President's Day sale.
Today, choose from four of Kia's most popular brand new 2018 models and get 0% financing for 75 months. That's free money and make no payments for 90 days.
Kia, America's best value gives you more. America's best warranty and a full line of award-winning vehicles to fit your budget and your lifestyle. SUVs, crossovers, sedans, luxury cars, the all-new 365-horsepower 2018 Kia Stinger GT and the 51-mile-per-gallon 2018 Kia Niro, highest-ranked small SUV in initial quality in 2017. For J.D. Power award information, visit jdpower.com.
Check out the President's Day sales specials now. On approval of credit, must finance through KMF for 0% and 90-day delayed payment offer. Subject to prior sales, 0% for 75 months is $13.33 per thousand financed. Sale ends 2/28.
Redding Kia, reddingkia.com. We'll be right back.
Founded in 1995, GI Pathology is the only physician-owned laboratory in the United States dedicated solely to the practice of gastrointestinal and liver pathology. The company provides the highest quality GI pathology diagnosis made exclusively by one of our fellowship-trained gastrointestinal and liver pathologists. GI Pathology delivers results to its Northern California client base within an industry-leading 24 hours. Call 888-2-GI-PATH or go to www.gipath.com for more information.
All right, welcome back to Radio Wasteland and our guest Stephen Bassett of the Paradigm Research Group, and we are talking about disclosure. Before the break, we were talking about how the government and the media represses this information, but
the truth embargo.
The truth embargo, yeah, I like that term. But I'd like to know why. Why are they repressing it? Why are they so hell-bent on repressing it?
This would have been viewed, I think, quite clearly as one of the gravest, most significant national security matters ever.
Mm-hmm.
And the United States had plenty of experience with national security matters. The war was over. Nuclear technology was now in place. There was the potential for another world war that would be with the Soviet Union, clearly. And the Soviet Union had nuclear weapons, or was going to. They knew this. They knew this by 47. So the world looks like it's about to get really dangerous, and suddenly they not only have sightings and these things turning up around the world, but they have a crashed vehicle, at least one, probably more than one, between 1947 and 52. So they now know that there's other civilizations. They don't know what they want, what they're capable of. They've got technology, which could have huge implications. Don't know if the Russians have crashes, vehicles as well. They're facing an enormous question mark. Huge. And as far as they were concerned, the national security implications overrode the public's right to know. It wasn't even a close call for them. And so, from the beginning, it was until we know more, until we understand this, until we understand that what the Soviets might have. This must not become public knowledge. And so they begin this process of containment. And as I mentioned, they get the papers online, and then it gives them a bit of a break. And during that period, they start to humiliate the issue and undermine it and what have you, and deny it and so forth, and get that meat kind of going. And so as media starts to develop, by the time media starts to expand in the United States, and we now get more television news and radio news, what have you, then they've already tainted the issue, and less people want to touch it. And now, I don't think in 1947-50 I think the Pentagon, the new CIA, the new NSA, and all of these national security people, which are part of a complex that was growing like a weed. I mean, it was just expanding at the same time, which helped the truth embargo, because you've got more and more resources coming into what we call the secret empire. I think they probably...
I wonder if the government just cut this off.
I do not think...
Oh, wait.
Thought
Stephen, you're going to have a... Stephen, you're cutting out.
I am cutting out?
Yeah.
Let me move the mic a little bit. I am on Skype coming into you, Skype the phone. Is that better?
Yeah, that seems better.
Okay.
That sounded exactly like some G-men got to you.
Yeah, yeah.
They break in, you just keep the tape. So
let me throw this out there real quick before we continue with that. You're bringing up the Russians prompted the question back to the media topic. Are these other countries like Russia now involved with the truth embargo?
The rest of the world is going along with the truth embargo. Our allies, all of our allies, from World War II, I mean, that's hardly surprising. A lot of countries out there are just sort of out of the loop. Let's just say that they're just not in a game, put them aside.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, we've got two major counter powers in the world, have been early on, Soviet Union and Communist China. And Communist China and Soviet Union elected to not bring this out. They elected that they weren't going to inform their people, possibly for similar reasons, but the reasons were certainly different than Canada or the United Kingdom. But they chose not to do it. So, and they could have. I mean, this could have easily been out long ago from one of the leaders of the Soviet Union or China. But they didn't do it, which then helped to ensure that this truth embargo would ultimately become institutionalized. And once it becomes institutionalized, it virtually has a life of its own. And the best way to think about institutionalized worldview or institutionalized meme is think of like North Korea. The North Korean ruling family has been there so long that it's been through several generations, meaning people who were born into it, had children who were born into it, they died, the children, and they died. And so the population of North Korea, in terms of what the North Korean government wants them to believe or not believe, is almost fully institutionalized, thus extremely controllable. That's the almost extreme case of institutionalized information control.
Right. Very Orwellian dystopian sort of situation.
The United States does not have the ability to operate at that breadth of scope. But with respect to the ET issue, the U.S. was highly motivated, and it did manage to institutionalize this issue. So even after the Cold War ended in 91, thereabouts, the truth embargo continued on. And while it's been under assault and weakened, and it's breaking and cracking around the edges, technically it's still in place because the government still has not acknowledged the ET presence.
Well, surely over the years we've not only figured out their technology, like you were saying, but we figured out some of their intention.
Maybe. The technology, yes. There's no question they've been studying the tech from the crash vehicles for 70 years, and there's some evidence that they have made progress there. I feel pretty good that they've got anti-gravitic craft. There's been witnesses to that. There's been testimony to that. They've had all the money they could possibly want, complete free reign. Almost all of this work is done in underground facilities. But the energy is a little more complicated because it's harder to know. So let's say they perfected the energy systems that those craft use. Unless those systems are operating in plain sight, we just don't know.
Right.
We only know that they've done everything they can to do it. And there's a fair chance that they have mastered it, or are close to mastering it. And so the two major technologies for anti-gravitic propulsion and the alien energy or ET energy system are the two things we're most interested in. And there's no question that those technologies in whatever form they currently exist are not available to the world's people.
Right. But, you know, it seems like over 70 years, like initially we repressed the truth out of fear of the unknown of what they were, what they wanted, and how we would interact together. But after 70 years, do we have any closer idea of their intent?
Right. The alien, yeah, that's the other part of the question, the extraterrestrial agenda.
Right.
And if there has been direct communication between elements of government and extraterrestrials, then I think it's fair to say that they know more about the extraterrestrial agenda than perhaps we do.
So we don't actually know if that relationship is going on.
No, we don't. We don't. It hasn't been proven.
I see.
So if it hasn't been, then they don't know any more than perhaps we do. I mean, the citizen science research effort has learned a lot, and a lot of that comes from contactees. I mean, that was a major change. And obviously a major problem for the truth embargo when contactees started coming out and we had a sort of an extraterrestrial Me Too thing developed, started back in the early 80s and this, of course, continued to grow. Large numbers of contactees have come forth. And they have a lot to say about what they have seen and heard and so forth. And from that, we've gathered some sense of what that agenda is, but it's not as comprehensive or as accurate as it would be if this was a completely out in the open, fully funded effort to understand this. The Citizen Science Research Activist Movement has been utterly without money of any substance at all for the entire time. It is basically people trying to get to the truth and force the government to tell the truth out of their own pocket. The institutionalized truth embargo, the humiliation of the issue, the ghettoizing of the issue is prevented, with a few exceptions. All of the very wealthy researchers, businessmen, scientists, wealthy philanthropists, philanthropic organizations, to prevent them from getting involved. And they're all part of the truth embargo. All the colleges are part of the truth embargo in the sense they've gone along with the institutionalized embargo forever. So we have some idea, but one of the things everybody wants to know is why are they here? And that's a pretty important question.
Well, this seems like a great time. It seems like a great time. We're coming up on our last commercial break with you. You're listening to Stephen Bassett here on Radio Wasteland. Stick around.
At Orchard Nutrition Center, we strive to be the gatekeepers of 100% organically grown produce. Our goal is to provide you and your family with produce that is fresh from the farm and pure 100% organically grown. Orchard Nutrition Center, Cypress Square Shopping Center, Reading.
Purpose-driven banking. That's the vision behind the founding of Five Star Bank in 1999. Services inspired by partnership and defined by shared vision and goals. Five Star Bank, a champion of local economic development and community stewardship. Your success is their success. Now that's smart people doing good business. In a world that's both more connected and more isolated by high tech, Five Star Bank brings you a personal touch to small business banking, cash management, and online services. Five Star Bank, consistently rated among the very best by industry associations, rating agencies, and of course, customers and partners just like you. Your partner in success is Five Star Bank. FiveStarBank.com. Visit your local branch at 358 Hartnell in Reading. Progressive, professional, personal. That's Five Star Bank. Equal housing lender, member FDIC.
This is Carl and Linda Bott. Join us Monday through Friday from 7 to 9 a.m. for Free Fire Radio right here on the studios of KCNR 1460. On Monday, we welcome Judy Maxwell, Maxwell Insurance, to talk about the impact of the ending of Obamacare. Has it really ended? What can you do to make sure that you have health insurance coverage? Also, we're still talking about that tragedy in Florida. More regulations or more mental health assistance? Is there an answer? Find out Monday, right here, Free Fire Radio, KCNR 1460.
What is happening in the state of Jefferson? Every week, there's a new chapter. To find out, listen to the Jefferson State of Mind program, Sunday morning at 9 a.m. on KCNR 1460 a.m. with your hosts, Wynn Carpenter and Terry Raposa. To catch up on past broadcasts or to listen anytime, go to KCNR1460.com and click on the archives link.
The time has come for 51 in a Jefferson State of Mind.
Founded in 1995, GI Pathology is the only physician-owned laboratory in the United States dedicated solely to the practice of gastrointestinal and liver pathology. The company provides the highest quality GI pathology diagnosis made exclusively by one of our fellowship-trained gastrointestinal and liver pathologists. GI Pathology delivers results to its Northern California client base within an industry-leading 24 hours. Call 888-2-GI-PATH or go to www.gipath.com for more information.
At Orchard Nutrition Center, we keep our produce pure by bathing our fruits and vegetables with water from our multi-stage purification system, leaving it fresh, clean, and crisp. Fresh from the farm to your family's table. Orchard Nutrition Center, Cypress Square Shopping Center, Reading.
All right, welcome back to Radio Wasteland and our guest, Stephen Bassett. We are discussing disclosure, which we're going to focus on a little bit more now here through our last
segment with you. So one thing that I've always been curious about, and I know that you probably don't have a definitive answer for this, but maybe you have some speculation. Does somebody like Donald Trump, when he gets elected, maybe we should go with somebody who's a lifelong politician. Trump's a little bit of an outlier. Does a politician, when they become elected, know about the cover-up prior to becoming president, or are they even informed, or is this something even the president is aware of?
Every person that runs for political office has access to all of the public information on this, the citizen science research. There have been thousands of books. There are websites. There have been journals. So there is a body of information in the public domain. It's available to anyone.
Right.
Now, the government has dismissed this information as being of no value, as gone as far as to say there is no extraterrestrial presence or any evidence of that at all, and so forth. But that information is there. In terms of what presidents may or may not be told by the military intelligence complex, which has now got a life of its own and has for some time, that is not fully known either. The person that has done the most to try to understand that is Grant Cameron. His website, presidentialufo.com, was built up for years based upon his visiting presidential libraries, doing research, and filing Freedom of Information Act requests. And it's probably the best we have in terms of understanding what presidents may or may not know. I can say that the early presidents were informed, certainly Truman, certainly Eisenhower. Kennedy is a mixed bag. It's hard to know there. It's kind of a tricky situation. Might have been given information, but he got off to a rather odd start. But he would have been briefed just before going in. So he might have been given some information, but they might have started to limit it at that point. It wouldn't surprise me. Nixon, I think, was given some information, had some sense of it. How much, we don't know. And then as you go forward, it's just less and less and less. Now, by and large, for some time, the presidents are not briefed on this. The Congress is not kept abreast of it. These are what we call unacknowledged special access programs. They're deep black. The ET issue is run down there, and you can't get to it.
So we're talking like generals know this, or...
Whoever is managing the program.
Interesting.
We don't know who manages it. There are probably, and there are committees, I call it cross-agency committees, that deal with it. It's deep, and the penalties for violating any security matters in that area would be severe. So exactly what kinds of people, whether there are any generals, whether it's just intelligence officers, we don't know.
So what about like Hillary Clinton and a few other politicians that were running kind of alluded to their willingness to look into it? You think that was just chasing votes, or you think they knew something?
No, that was PRG's political initiative, it started in 1994. I don't have time to get into it, but if you go to paradigmresearchgroup.org and look under projects and find the 2016 election initiative, you will see what PRG was doing between mid-2013 and the election in 2016. I was able to generate hundreds and hundreds of articles about the connection between the ET issue and President candidate Clinton, and it almost triggered a major breakout in the media that would have led to disclosure pretty quickly. There's a contribution that PRG made to this process.
We don't have too much more time, but what do you think disclosure will look like, and what do you think the response will be? I realize you don't have a direct answer for this, but I'm sure you've speculated.
Well, disclosure is defined carefully in the advocacy movement. It's capital B, and it's the announcement by heads of state. That's what it is, nothing else. A small D disclosure can be any number of things, but disclosure will be announced by the head of state. It will come probably a little without warning. I don't think there'll be some, there'll be a, the people in the know, perhaps like myself and some others, may sort of sense it's close, but the vast majority of people will have no idea. It'll completely blindside them. And that announcement will come out. It'll almost certainly be a single head of state. I doubt there will be any cooperation or coordination. But very quickly after that, other heads of state will follow. They're not going to stand on the sidelines and play deaf and dumb. They're going to follow, and you'll have, in short order, essentially what amounts to a global acknowledgement.
So you don't think it's going to be premeditated disclosure? You think one guy's going to break, and it's going to come out, and everybody else is going to have to fall in line?
Oh, it's premeditated. I mean, I'm just saying that it'll be one nation, the head of state of one nation will decide, I'm going to do it. This is time. I'm going to do it. Hmm. And they're going to do that. And then the others will have much no choice but to follow, whether they wanted to or not. A lot of them will be thrilled to follow. In other words, finally, we can speak to this.
Right.
And we'll be in the post-disclosure world. And that is going to be a very, let's just say, interesting time. And we could spend days and weeks discussing the possibilities in that time.
I was
but the world will be guided up at that point. AD, PD. Post-disclosure and, I mean, I'm sorry, before disclosure, BD, and after disclosure, AD.
I always felt that disclosure was going to come on the heels of an admission of discovering microbial life, that it was going to be premeditated on that level, because I really feel like we're sort of on the brink of possibly finding that within our solar system.
Oh, we've already found it, trust me.
Well, I mean, publicly,
everything
yeah.
You think, everything you have been told by the government about what they know, it's like 10, 15 years behind where they actually are. This is part of a game. But, again, they would, there are those in there that want to stretch this out as long as possible. They'd like to make a first announcement about microbial life, and that, because that's so safe. It's not really so disruptive.
Right.
But unfortunately for them, the citizen science activist movement has just made too much progress. It's gone far enough that nobody is going to buy that nonsense. Meaning, oh, you mean there are microbes out there, not on Earth? Oh, but there's no ET presence now. All the other evidence doesn't mean anything now. So that opportunity is gone. So it's not going to come. They may make that announcement, and that's fine. And if they do, if they were to announce that they have confirmed the presence of clearly of life on another planet, one of these exoplanets, that would be pretty impressive. It would be a big day, but it would accelerate the disclosure process on the ET presence substantially. It would give a lot of gravitas and credibility to all of the people that are pushing that, and just make it even harder for the truth embargo to hold. So that's one of the reasons they might have been holding off on that, because they know that we're not going to settle for that. So they've kind of held off on that. They've held off on what they know about water on Mars. The NASA's been compromised to death. Poor NASA. I feel so bad for it. We now, American people and many other citizens of other nations, literally today, sail in a ship of lies on an ocean of secrecy.
Well, I like that line a lot. Unfortunately, we're here at the end of the show. Can you remind our listeners a little bit of how they can find out more about you, the Paradigm Research Group, and disclosure in general?
You got to spell Paradigm correctly. It's P-A-R-A-D-I-G-M. Some people say Paradigm. ParadigmResearchGroup.org. Everything about what I do and have done is all there and a lot more, with links to other sites and so forth. So ParadigmResearchGroup.org, you can sign up for the update list there. If you want to contribute, well, naturally, there's a contribution section.
Well, great. I really appreciate you being on the show, Stephen. It's been very enlightening, very awesome to really address disclosure. We haven't done that yet. So you've been listening to Stephen Bassett here on Radio Wasteland. Don't forget, ParadigmResearchGroup.org. Check us out next week.
Like dolphins. The news is brought to you on KCNR, Shasta, Redding, by Tobacco and Brew. Come see their newly remodeled store at 2143 Hilltop Drive in Redding. Tobacco and Brew, open 7 days a week.
News this hour at townhall.com. I'm Bob Agnew in Washington. At a summit on global security in Munich, Director of National Intelligence Dan Coats said it was difficult to know whether the recent military victories over the Islamic State group have been enough to wipe it out.
It's like killing an octopus. We've driven a knife into its heart, but the tentacles have spread.
At the same conference, Russia's former ambassador to the U.S. dismissed the charges detailing alleged Russian interference in the